Blog Talk Radio.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Roger, we got a roll program.
Tower clear.
Roger, roll.
We open the door around here, a big old rocket comes flying through. Good evening. Come on in. Welcome to Erie House Radio. We're going to moon you tonight, and I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with.
I did my mooning yesterday. Dave Binkley from the Weirdness, really bad movie. And I ended up with a ticket. Thank you very much.
There you go. More. Excellent stories about going to the moon tonight. You know, there's been so many good movies about it, and I think long before we even came close to having the capacity to go to the moon, it's been an area of the moon itself has been an object of fascination. Cultures have worshipped it. Different animals rely on the tide from the moon as it impacts their environment. So, like, the moon's pretty important.
Yeah, absolutely. It also affected my ex-wife's cycle there. It only made her grumpy 15 days before. And then for 15 days afterwards. So, you know.
Wow. And there is something. You've heard the old fable of the full moon and its impact on people as well. And I'll tell you something. I've known hospital people who say the ERs get pretty full on full moons. And having worked in the nightclub industry for over 20 years, weird things happen on full moons. There is something to it. I think some people are affected by the moon.
Well, in one case, Dale, I mean, yours also was infected by alcohol. So, you know, I don't know that that can be fully. But I will tell you a story about my oldest son. He went into the hospital to be born, and I think there was one baby there. It became, I guess it was a full moon. And by 3 o'clock that afternoon, there were a dozen babies there. So I agree.
Yeah, something weird. And yes, of course, alcohol came into play, but alcohol came into play every night. Full moons, extremely weird things happen. Once someone even drove a car into the bar on a full moon.
Well, they couldn't find the drive-through window, so they made one.
Yeah, it could be. Hi, Fogs. Hi, Funeral. Welcome to Erie House chat room. As we get ready to wrap up our weekend celebrating the moon mission and the safe return of our astronauts from Apollo 11, 50 years.
Yeah, but one thing you can't ignore if you're talking about the wrapping up of the trip to the moon is the plaque that we left there on the moon. It says, "Here men from the planet Earth first set foot upon the moon June 1969 AD. We came in peace for all mankind." And it had the three astronauts, Buzz Aldrin and Armstrong and Collins, and, of course, the president, Richard Nixon. Those signatures that were on this plaque that remains on the moon to this day.
As far as we know, no one's picked up that telegram, but we'll keep waiting. We'll wait.
Well, you know what this kind of always reminds me of? I don't know if you ever saw it. It was a fun little series that Andy Griffith called Salvage or Salvage One. The movie was Salvage. The series was Salvage One. He owned a scrapyard. And he built this rocket to go to the moon, pick up all the junk that was on the moon, bring it back and sell it. That was the premise for the pilot episode. And then they just had this rocket that they used from time to time for other things. It was just, I thought it was a really cool thing, and especially being the premise that they made this rocket from spare parts and stuff, and they were going to the moon to collect all the junk. When, you know, when you think of things like this that are there, no, don't do that.
Dave, you got some interesting entries for tonight. Exploring Tomorrow.
Yeah, these are a little later entries. I mean, the other stuff we did, I guess the X minus one, the light last night wasn't too far behind, but you had two shows from 1950 and one from 1957, I believe the X minus one was. Well, today we have one from 1958 and one from 1964. Still before we were about halfway through our mission of landing the moon on the moon in a decade. There that JFK kind of made the pronouncement of, but we still weren't there yet. And so it's always interesting to see in hindsight, as we now do, what it was like, how others thought in science fiction it might be to land on the moon. We have two completely different ideas of that tonight.
We do. And, We got some music for you tonight as well. It's moon related.
We do a couple of them there, yeah.
Fun stuff. Look at the moons on that gal. But
hey.
Shall we set off with Dave?
You know what? Why don't we take it in order of the years? Let's start off with Exploring Tomorrow. Interesting story. First man on the moon. Actually, I was looking at it. It had another title originally. Let me see. The Moon is New was the title, but it's also the alternate title was First Man on the Moon. And just interesting that the Exploring Tomorrow science fiction series from ABC radio. And it was hosted by a guy that guided a lot of science fiction writers of the era, John W. Campbell Jr., who was editor of Astounding Magazine. He was also, in a sense, not really necessarily the narrator. I guess it would be a host narrator type role for them. Oh, I'm sorry, it was Mutual. It was not ABC. It was Mutual. A series that ran from December 4th, 1957, till June 13th, 1958. Number of these still exist. There are a lot of different places where you can find them. You'll hear people in the cast, not necessarily this one, but Mandel Kramer, Bryna Rayburn, Lawson Zerbe, Mason Adams, Larry Haynes, Brett Morrison. Now, if any of those names sound familiar, all of those people also were regulars on the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, including Brett Morrison, who did probably 6 to 8 Radio Mystery Theaters as well. Of course, was the last and longest person who played the Shadow. But he did a lot of things. He did an Exploring Tomorrow episode, not Exploring Tomorrow, the Beyond Tomorrow that was on CBS for a very short time. And he did several of the X minus ones. So so he was all over the place with this, not just being the Shadow.
Yep, and if you would like to check out the magazines, some of this stuff is based on Astounding Magazine, as Exploring Tomorrow is, and of course we heard about Galaxy last night with Dimension X. Check the Internet Archive; they have a number of issues of the old pulp magazines with the sci-fi and adventure stories. So if you're into this kind of stuff, you might like that as well. But we've got a wonderful tale for you, not the H.G. Wells story, I guess, called First Man on the Moon from Exploring Tomorrow.
From January 22nd, 1958.
The program you are about to hear is fiction, science fiction. We make no guarantees, however, how long it will remain fiction.
Exploring Tomorrow. And now here is your guide to these adventures of the mind, the editor of Astounding Science Fiction magazine, John Campbell, Jr.
The scene is a missile testing base somewhere in the continental United States. The time? 2:30 on a Tuesday afternoon, 5, maybe 10 years from now. A rather unusual missile is getting worked over. Blast off is 10 minutes away, and the countdown is in its last stages. And a man is sitting inside this missile, waiting. The United States is about to make its first attempt to send a manned rocket to the moon.
9 minutes to blast off, Captain. Still feel loose and easy?
Like a bird, Colonel, waiting to be cut loose and sore. How do you feel?
Me, Captain? I'm just sitting here in the observation tower. You're the one in the launching pad. You're the man going to the moon.
And you're the one who has to face all the reporters after blast off. Me, I'm glad I'll be up there alone. How much time left, Colonel?
6 minutes, 20 seconds. Let's run through the schedule one last time.
Okay. I sit in this cradle and I wait for the rockets to toss me up into space. I get 500 seconds of 4G acceleration. Then I sit around and look out the viewport for the next 4 days while the ship coasts in 0G free fall. I'm roughly 8 1/4 minutes past four. On Sunday afternoon, the autopilot is going to turn the rocket engines on again, long enough to land me in the Oceanus Procellarum, which better be as dry as the Palomar boys say it is. I climb into my little Jim Dandy spacesuit, wander around the moon for a while, take some snapshots, pick up a couple of rocks as souvenirs. And 15 hours after landing, I get back into my ship and I come home. Did I leave anything out?
Not a thing, Captain. 3 minutes, 10 seconds.
Well, all I do is sit here and wait anyway. Computer down below in the belly of the ship does all the work. Me, Mike Wellman, first man on the moon. Maybe, anyway.
What do you mean, maybe? The ship's been tested thoroughly. There's no possibility of...
A blow-up? No, go ahead. Don't be afraid to say it. I wasn't talking about that. The odds are pretty good that this bird is going to get me there. Only thing I'm wondering about is whether someone else is going to get there ahead of me. I'd hate to find a big vodka party going on when I get there.
90 seconds. They're clearing the launching pad, Captain. We better break contact now. Good luck. The next time I hear from you, it's going to be from space.
Sure, Colonel. I'll report as soon as I'm in free fall. Then radio messages every 4 hours. You won't forget about those baseball scores, will you?
Of course. 30 seconds, Captain. And all America is rooting for you.
And I'm rooting for the Dodgers. So long, Colonel. See you next week when I get back.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mark.
Launching base, how do I come in?
Clear and sharp, Captain.
Oh, glad to hear it. Okay, ship's time, 1,452 hours. Blast off went fine from this end. I got through acceleration good enough. 4Gs isn't much fun, but I don't mind it in 8 minute stretches. The ship's in free fall now, no gravity at all. And it's weird, all right. Even after all those hours in the training chamber, I still feel a little strange. Very quiet up here. Nice. Man really can think here. The view is really something. Where did you see the photos?
How about the psychological reaction? You don't feel cut off?
Me? A guy whose idea of heaven is being alone with some books? Colonel, I like it up here. The psych test said I was an introvert, didn't they?
Well, not really. Just sort of solitary-minded.
Same thing. Well, it's us solitary-minded people who are going to be your spacemen, Colonel. We don't mind the loneliness. Listen, Colonel, how are the cosmic ray readings coming through?
Perfect. All the equipment seems to be functioning.
Including the pilot. Or rather, the live cargo, because that's all I really am. Okay, Colonel, I got a few odd jobs to do on board. And I'll be talking to you again in 4 hours. Over. Here I am again, Colonel. 2 days out, still no sweat. I'm getting used to this no-gravity business, and
now,
I...
Go on with the rest of the report, Captain. There's been a change in the operational plans.
Huh? What kind of change?
You want landing on the moon. Pentagon orders are for you to adjust the computer to alternate course B. Circle the moon and return to Earth without landing.
Hey, wait a minute, sir. How come the switch?
Well, it's an awkward situation, Captain. You see, between the time I last spoke to you and now, the Russians... I know this will come as kind of a shock to you. The Russians made a successful landing on the moon.
No!
Radio Moscow announced it 2 hours ago. And since then, we've picked up broadcasts from the Russian ship. They've landed, all right.
They beat us to it. By two stinking days, 2 days earlier, and I would have been the first.
You haven't heard the worst part of it yet. The Russians have claimed the moon.
They what?
Like Columbus claiming the Western Hemisphere. We're putting up a yell, of course, but there just isn't any precedent for this kind of thing. The UN is meeting to decide whether they have any right to.
So this is why I can't land, huh?
The Russians say they'll regard any lunar landing as trespassing on their property. We can't risk an incident, of course. So for the time being, we're going to hold back and wait till the legal aspect of this business is worked out.
So I can't land. They send me up here and I ride around for a week and don't even put my foot down on the moon. Uh-uh, Colonel. Russia doesn't own the moon, no matter what they say.
Captain Woman.
I'm sorry, Colonel. I'm more than halfway there, and I'm darned if I'm going to miss my chance. I'm going to land, sir.
Well, then, listen to me. You can't disobey orders.
Yes, I can, sir. I'm landing. Over and out.
It's not that the moon wasn't meant for man. It's just that man was never... designed for the moon. It's a fantastically inhospitable place. Harsh, blinding sunlight with no atmosphere to dim it. Jagged shadows. The rocks are hard, sharp-edged. There has been no weathering to soften them, and the shadows are just as hard and black. It's not a nice place to be alone. Or even when there's only one other human being within 200,000 miles.
I don't know if you want to hear from me again, Colonel, but I'm beaming this anyway. Look, I just wanted to let you know that I've landed on the moon as originally scheduled. Yeah, right on the nose, in the designated landing area. Northern branch of the Oceanus Procellarum. And you can tell the Palomar fellas that they were right all along. Maybe this was an ocean once, but not in the last million years or so. As for the Russian ship, it isn't any hoax. I saw it when I came down. It's about 50 miles north of here. Maybe later I'll break out the rocket sled and wander over there for some vodka. The Russians are trying to contact me now. I better shift channel and see what they want. Over, Colonel. Come on in, Ivan.
Da, yes, tovarish, nishivo.
I'm afraid that uses up my Russian vocabulary, Ivan. How's your English?
I am Captain Dmitry Novikov, Solid Space Forces. You are illegally trespassing on our property, American.
I am, huh? Say, your English is pretty good, but your politics isn't. You say the moon is yours, huh? Lunar Soviet Socialist Republic? I'm sorry to disagree. Just getting here first doesn't give you the right to claim the whole place, you know.
The matter has been considered by our legal experts. We have established prior claim. I am under orders to request you to leave Russian territory immediately.
But this is cockeyed, claiming the whole moon. Now, look here, Dmitry.
You will address me as Captain Novikov.
Okay. Now, look here, Novikov. The moon's a big place, and there's room for a lot of us up here. It really isn't fair to want to hog the whole thing yourself.
The Presidium said Soviet policy, not space pilots. I'm instructed to warn you that you are trespassing. I do not wish to debate the matter with you.
So I'm trespassing, then. What are you going to do about it?
My ship is armed.
And you can't figure out any better way of celebrating the conquest of space than starting a war about it?
The United States ordered you not to make a landing. They recognize our claim. We cannot tolerate violation of our rights.
And you're going to be nasty about it, I see, huh? Well, I'll take my chances. Now I've got some work to do before I go back. I'll be leaving the moon in 14 hours and a bit. Hey, how long are you staying up here? You've been here better than 2 days already. You planning to hold the fort forever?
My plans for departure should not concern you.
Well, I'm just curious, that's all. Okay, Dmitry. Maybe I'll be talking to you again soon. And yeah, you
sneaky son of a gun. Congratulations. You did get here first. Over. Come in, launching base. You hear me?
We're getting you, woman. We read you.
Look, I just had a little chat with the Ruski. There seems to be only one of them. He gave me some malarkey about firing you on me if I don't clear off the moon right away.
Wilman, you insubordinate idiot, you're liable to touch off a war over this moon trip.
Well, what was I supposed to do? Smile politely and turn back just because they got here first? You think they have any right to claim the moon?
Of course not, but that's not the point. You were ordered not to risk trouble by landing.
Yeah, and I landed anyway. Well, go ahead, chop my head off when I get back to Earth. Meanwhile, I'm here, and if that Russian doesn't blow me up, I expect to do a little exploring in the next 14 hours.
I don't think the Russian's going to blow you up. He's got his own troubles.
What do you mean?
Well, we've decoded some of the messages he's been sending back to Moscow. Seems he made a faulty landing and has to make some repairs on his ship. It may take him a week or two, and he doesn't have enough food. Russia may be crowing about claiming the moon, but it's going to look bad for them if their spaceman can't get back and starve to death.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be rough. Maybe I better call him back and see if I can help him out.
Well, then leave him alone. He's a Russian.
He's a human being. And so am I. Get off the wire and let me call him, Colonel.
I order you not to make any overtures to that Russian.
Look, I'm not on Earth now. There doesn't need to be a Cold War up here, too, Colonel. And I have plenty of food to spare. Give the folks back home my love. I'm going to call Ivan again.
Interesting wrinkle there, Dave. Does humanity trump national pride? Who knows? Who knows?
Yep, and the interesting twist as well that the Russians beat us there. And why not? By this time, the Russians had already put Sputnik up there and were working on manned missions as well. So by 1958 here. A little bit on John Wood Campbell Jr., who is the host of this. He was an American science fiction writer and editor. He was editor of Astounding Science Fiction, later called Analog Science Fiction and Fact, from 1937 till his death, and was part of in 1971. It was part of the golden age of science fiction. Campbell wrote super science space opera under his own name, and stories under his primary pseudonym of Don A. Stewart. Campbell also used the pen names of Carl Van Campen and Arthur McCann. His novella, Who Goes There?, was adapted as films The Thing from Another World in 1951, The Thing in 1982, and The Thing in 2011. He began writing science fiction at the age of 18 while attending MIT. He published 6 short stories, 1 novel, and 6 letters in the science fiction magazine Amazing Stories from 1930 to 1931. His work established Campbell's reputation as a writer of space adventure when 34 began to write stories with a different tone. He wrote as Don A. Stewart from 1930 until the later part of that decade. Campbell was a prolific and successful under both names, though he stopped writing fiction shortly after he became editor of Astounding in 1937. As editor of Astounding Science Fiction, later called Analog, and then Fact, from 1937 until his death, in which Campbell was primarily remembered today, as well as 1939, Campbell started the fantasy magazine Unknown, although it was canceled after only 4 years, referring to his time spent as editor. Encyclopedia of Science Fiction wrote, more than any other individual, he helped to shape modern science fiction. Isaac Asimov called Campbell the most powerful force in science fiction ever and said the first 10 years of his editorship, he dominated the field completely. In his capacity as an editor, Campbell published some of the very earliest work and helped shape the careers of virtually every important author to debut between 1938 and 1946, including Robert A. Heinlein, Theodore Sturgeon, Isaac Asimov, and Arthur C. Clarke. How's that to have in your back pocket, Dale?
That's amazing, because that's all the good stuff I used to read growing up, and along with, of course, the great Ray Bradbury. Also a very accomplished science fiction writer. But Campbell, that surprises me, Dave. When, as soon as you said who goes there, I'm like, oh, man, the thing.
Yeah.
And when you consider the period in which these stories were written, very, very imaginative. Excellent premises that he wrote his stories upon, including tonight's story.
Yes. Very interesting to see what happens now. The Russians got there first, but it landed a little hard, so it looks like they're kind of be stuck there, huh?
We'll find out if this fellow's going to help them or not in the exciting conclusion of First Man on the Moon from Exploring Tomorrow.
You know, it's one thing to make a claim, to say, this is mine. It's something else to hold on to it and make the claim stick. Somewhat like the colonel. It was a little difficult for him to enforce the orders he was trying to give to the man on the moon.
Novikov, you getting me?
You have 3 hours to leave Russian territory. Then I must commence action.
Now, look, don't give me that stuff. I know your ship's disabled and you're in trouble.
This is untrue. My ship is in good condition.
Dan Trotsky was Rasputin's brother. You know, Novikov, I sometimes feel I'm the only sane man in a world of lunatics. Those idiots down there in Washington didn't want me to land because it might make Moscow sore. And you don't want any help from me because I'm not a good Marxist. It's a losing battle, Dmitri. Everyone seems to know what he really wants, and yet everybody tries hard to get the opposite.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. You just sit tight. I'm going to launch the rocket sled and get over your way with a couple of cartons of provisions. If you won't take food from a lackey of Wall Street, that's your business. I'm coming over anyway.
Boy, it's good to get that helmet off. Hello, Novikov. My name's Mike Wellman.
Why have you done this? What trick are you playing?
Listen, friend, all I'm doing is bringing you some of my spare food. Nothing up my sleeve at all.
I do not understand that. Up my sleeve?
It's a decadent capitalist idiom. Means I'm not trying to fool you. The supplies are out on the rocket sled. Get into your suit and let's drag them in.
I said I would fire on you. And you bring me food?
Yeah, silly, isn't it? But they told me they picked up your messages to Moscow. That you were going to be stuck here a few weeks for repairs.
I was not telling the truth.
Hmm?
This ship will never take off again. The rear rocket tubes are hopelessly crumpled. The fuel field lines are severed. It was a very poor landing. I gave incorrect data to the computer.
And you told them you could fix it?
They do not like to receive news of failure. Leave me alone, American. Take your food and go away.
Hey, what are you going to eat? Rocks? There won't be a rescue ship up here for a month, at least.
There will be no rescue ship for me. I do not deserve rescue.
You just sit up here and starve to death?
I made a faulty landing. I cannot return to my country now.
Then I disobeyed orders. I wasn't supposed to land because the moon is red property now. But the only Russian here is stranded, helpless.
Do not mock me.
I'm not. That's a fine bunch of spacemen you and me are. You smash up your ship and I disobey half my orders. But I'm glad I disobeyed anyway. At least there'll be one practical result of my trip. I'll be saving a man's life.
You?
Sure. You're coming back with me to Earth. We can jettison some of the meters and stuff and make room for you. I bet you don't weigh more than 150. We can manage.
Sure.
But save the butts for later. And if you try to argue me out of it, I'll slug you. I'm on my way home. Pretty fair blast off, and we're 20,000 miles out from the moon now. Oh, I left a little of the equipment behind. The next ship can pick it up. And I've got a passenger.
You mean that Russian?
Yeah. Seems his ship was wrecked, so I talked him into coming back with me. He's down back in the galley fixing lunch now. I guess we'll both be called traitors for saying it, but we've sort of become friends. And he doesn't think Russia ought to claim the moon either.
Well, I only have one distinction anyway. Maybe a Russian
was the first to get to the moon, but an American one that made the first successful round trip.
I like to think of it in a different way. Not an American ship or a Russian ship. Stuff like that shouldn't matter anymore. Call it a ship from Earth. Yeah. Novikov and I started out separately, but we're coming back together. The first expedition from Earth to Moon is coming home.
To man, of course. To mankind. Earth is really a twin planet. No other planet we know of has a moon that's practically as big as the planet itself. The moon is Earth's smaller sister. And it, like the Earth, belongs to man. We earned it. We worked for it. For 3 billions of years. We have been evolving and struggling and growing. The next growth is out to the moon. We're on our way.
Well, there you go. Our first story, that's first man on the moon.
When some people hear, as time goes by, they think of Bogey. When some people hear it, they think of that PBS or BBC sitcom, as time goes by. When I hear it, I think of Exploring Tomorrow.
It's a surprising story for the period it was written. It wasn't very far after McCarthyism, and to have a story with a friendly ending with a Russian, are you kidding me?
Yeah, and this is the kind of thing that you could say in science fiction that you couldn't say if it were not science fiction, I think. Certainly during that time, look at all the writers and actors and such, they got blacklisted during this time. You're right. Quite surprising for the time, and that we essentially let the Russians beat us in every aspect, including landing on the moon and theirs, in that particular story. And yet we still help them out, and we're all one planet.
Yeah, one big happy planet. Look around. we're in trouble. That's why it's good to have science fiction to escape to.
Absolutely. And even with science fiction, there always seems to be something we might be able to learn.
I imagine there is. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story.
If apology is the gar, it doesn't matter who's first on the moon. Is actually only spoke by the losers. We did it first. Take that, Russia. Go ahead. This is why we need Gar, you see.
Yes. Jenny Weissmuller had a little stutter there.
He did.
Yes.
Yes. It is a neat story. When you talk about all the competitions and races and science fiction, many times competitions or things like this far better than what we have in real life. A lot more things may have been more civil in science fiction sometimes than real life seems to be.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But it's amazing how, you know, I think the space missions from NASA, I think that they had a direct effect on science fiction and films, Dave. If you think about it, 1 year before we landed on the moon, 1968 was the turning point when you had films like quality science fiction films like 2001, A Space Odyssey and Planet of the Apes. Those were the first two science fiction films that were really visually impressive with a few exceptions for their periods. And and the stories were, you know what I mean, they were pretty mind-bending. And, of course, that was exactly 1 year. We knew we were going to the moon, and who knows what kind of minds that opened as far as writers in the genre, knowing that, hey, we're really going to make it in our lifetime. We're going to go to the moon.
Yeah.
And we did.
Although you never know. You know, look how close we were to having, you know, had Neil Armstrong had not taken the control away from the computer and landed himself, they very well could have crash landed on the moon and been stuck there themselves, just like in the story was here. So even though you know you're going to go and you know you're going to make it there, there was two parts to the Kennedys' demand that within a decade we reach the moon and return safely again. Those are the two parts of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting there is only half the trip.
Yeah, that's true.
Coming home would be nice. Thanks. Don't leave me here. The green cheese.
Yep. And I bet he had some good vodka to bring back with him too, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Stoli.
Mix that in with your tang, buddy.
There you go. Oh, there you go. There's an astronaut screwdriver. Mix a little tang with your vodka.
Oh, my. Science fiction is so much fun. It's so neat when you, science fiction is cool, but here's something that we're looking at that we now look back in hindsight. As I said earlier, that we know what happened and how it happened. And these guys had no idea. And it's so cool to look back on that time now and see it. So
that's the fun of these old stories, you know what I mean? Even as a kid growing up with Mercury going over to the Gemini program and then going to Apollo, you know we were going to go to the moon. And I think that sparked interest for a lot of the kids that watched that stuff in the 50s. They were the guys who ended up working at NASA. Just like the guys who watched Star Trek. They're great inventors and creators today.
Well, you know what? I didn't pull it up, but that's one thing that we need to do, if not for today, or during maybe the show we'll do that. Pull up inventions that came out of our space program that we are using ourselves. I think we've talked a little bit about that in the past, but it's so appropriate with our topic tonight that maybe during our shows we can pull up some of those inventions that basically were created through the technology of the space program.
And we can do that after our second show, Dave, or maybe at the break.
Well, at the break, I thought I might talk a little bit about the most recognizable voice in this program, the wonderful Fred Foy. So we'll have some time afterwards. I know you want to talk about some movies and such, but I think we ought to do a quick look in between also about what's going on, what the space program brought us besides bills.
Yes. So let's move on over to Theater 5. This one's called First Encounter, Dave.
Yeah, this is Theater 5 was ABC's, their attempt to have a revival at the of old time radio, in the sense that it was 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, and they usually had two feeds. If you were an affiliate that had the program, and I was looking to see how I saw it, it was fed between 2 and 2:54 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and again from 10:29 to 10:54 Eastern Time. Now, they could have either aired it live as it was coming down the line, or what many did, just like they did with the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, and also the 0 hour and the Mutual Radio Theater. Most stations recorded them as they came off the line and then aired them when they had them scheduled. So many shows. This was on for about 2 years, and there were of these episodes. And again, it was a great variety, much like your Mystery Theater is. It's 6 ghost, horror, supernatural dramas, 8 suspense dramas, 10 fantasy dramas, 12 action adventure dramas, 13 social dramas, 17 crime dramas, 18 topical dramas, 24 comedies, 25 mystery dramas, 26 melodramas, 26 psychological dramas, 35 human interest dramas. That leaves us with 18 science fiction or space age dramas. And that's what we have tonight.
And here's part one of First Encounter Theater from Theater. I'm sorry, First Encounter from Theater 5.
September 10th, 1964.
I can see them. I can see them now. Faces like gargoyles, and hands and feet.
Claws. They have claws. They're ugly and hideous.
They can see us, too.
We find you Earth people equally repulsive, but we are more tolerant.
Theater 5 presents First Encounter.
Constant signal still loud and clear, but no voice contact at last 3 checkpoints. Use auxiliary battery. Come in, Orion 1. Over.
What does he think we've been trying?
Take it easy, Joe. Try again. Margaret, anything on your board?
All systems check. We're transmitting, Clay. I'm sure of it.
Okay. Orion 1 to Space Central. I hope you hear this one. Orion 1 in moon orbit. Repeat, in moon orbit. All systems A-OK. Over.
Should be at checkpoint Z. Ready for landing. Space Central to Orion 1. Come in, Orion 1.
Rack it up. The biggest moment in history, and they've blown a tube in their receiver.
Well, the folks on Earth will have to get their news late on the playback from our tape.
Yeah, at least it's working.
Clay, I just got a strange reading from the nose sensor. Temperature suddenly shot up 400 degrees, and then it dropped.
Are you sure? The drop is normal. We're over the dark side of the moon now, but...
That's just it, Clay. The jump in temperature took place as we crossed the temperate zone between the light and dark sides of the moon.
That could mean sudden friction.
Yes, caused by an atmosphere circling the temperate zone of the moon.
Atmosphere? Oh, it seems impossible.
Joe, fire the retro rockets. I'm going on manual control.
Right. We're holding at 1/2 mile per second.
Well, that'll keep us from burning up if it is atmosphere.
Air on the moon? Well, that could mean the possibility of life.
Altitude 53 miles, nose temperature now constant at 280 degrees.
Good. Good enough to boil us alive.
Nothing clear on the TV monitor.
More retro, Joe. Just a little.
Velocity slowing, altitude 30 miles.
Look at that monitor. Mountains.
The Cordilleras.
All systems, final check. Space suits burst.
Suits fine. Cabin pressure okay.
Stern landing gear extended.
Starting vertical ascent.
Periscope swung to stern. Seems clear below.
Ascent slowing. Free fall starting. 37 miles. 32. 26.
Counterblast.
Amen.
Me too.
Okay. Let's get out of these harnesses and put on our weighted boots. If there's atmosphere, there may be wind.
Yes, and with a lesser gravity on the moon, a slight breeze would blow us for miles.
Clay, take a look at this gauge. There's oxygen out there, all right.
But we don't know how much or what else is in the atmosphere until we test it. Till we do, we keep our spacesuits sealed. All right, everybody. Suit up and into the airlock. All right, Joe. Let's open the hatch and lower the ladder. All right.
Earthman, first close-up view of the moon.
Joe, climb down and stack the equipment as Margaret and I lower it. And be sure to stake it down.
Okay, here I go. Captain Joseph Gregson, first Earthman on the moon.
Clay, you're still calm as cream. What will it take to excite you?
Oh, not much, Marge. Just the look on the faces of my kids and my wife when we get back.
Sorry, Clay. Oh, this oxygen tank, it seems to weigh less than nothing.
Your sample kit, aerated spray paint, Geiger counter.
I'm bringing the tape recorder, Clay. The president's dedication.
We therefore dedicate this expedition to all the peoples of Earth and pray that this beginning on virgin territory, unsoiled by man's tragic history, shall give birth to a new understanding among our nations. I, Major Clayton Brown, as commander of Orion 1, have been instructed to express my own feelings at this moment. We are looking at Earth. We can see it turning, see the sun shining on continents. Other continents are in the shadows of night. Yet as Earth turns, I realize that each part of the world, each nation, will get equal shares of the sun's light. Maybe that's what God intended. All right, let's get to work.
Well, it is a plant, and it is green. Photosynthesis is taking place. That means the atmosphere has carbon dioxide and water vapor.
And I found no evidence of toxicity, Clay.
Okay. Stand by with the respirator while I take off my helmet.
Right.
Well, if this isn't air, it's a good substitute. Come on. Let's get up to the crest of this small crater and get our bearings.
Right.
There's rock erosion, but it's hardly more than sand. Slight radioactivity. Not enough to be dangerous. It's coming from these rocks.
Now, I'll take a sample. You two go on ahead.
Looks like a level plain down there.
Too level to be natural.
Hey, Clay, quick. The oxygen tank floated off. I started to chase it, but it just disappeared.
I told you to be careful. The slightest
there
wind.
There wasn't any wind.
Clay, I feel something. I can't explain it, but it's like someone watching me.
The tank was lying right here. I turned my back to get the ore sample. And then I saw it floating over this way. Look. Are those marks on the sand?
They look like tiny claw marks.
Marge, go to the ship. Joe and I... Now look, that's an order.
All right. But take off those weighted boots. If you see something, you'll have an advantage.
Good thinking. We'll join you in a minute or two.
Whose idea was it to send a woman on this expedition?
Oh, hurry up with those boots. Margaret's at the ship. Now, let's see if there's a trail of these marks.
There. Right over... Clay, the tracks, I see them moving.
The sand's being kicked aside.
Whatever it is, it's invisible.
Help me!
Clay, she's gone.
That sound, some sort of vehicle. Look, these parallel marks leading down toward the plane.
Let's go.
Wait, those spray cans of paint. Maybe if we spray, we'll be able to see what we're fighting.
The vehicle tracks. Did they peter out here near the rocks?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. But the claw tracks go on. Well, whatever made them disappeared, too.
That ledge. It looks like an entrance to a cave.
Yeah. It's a tight squeeze. Made it.
Steps. Well, but these walls glow.
If you feel anything, start spraying.
Yeah. A door.
This lever. It's stuck. Let's pull together. Come on. There we go.
All right, where do we go from here? There must be 100 doors.
No!
This one, quick! Now, this room's empty.
Marge, where are you?
Glass partition. Look, she's strapped to that table. That instrument. It's moving right toward her eyes. I gotta smash this thing.
Clay! Something's grabbed me. I can't see. Spray, quick!
I'm being carried, but I can't see what or who.
Adventure and danger in space.
Absolutely. Captured by an invisible beam.
That's great to see that someone in 64 was still trying to keep the radio thing going with some exciting tales like this.
Yeah, but pretty much everybody knew there wasn't an atmosphere on Earth or on the moon that could support breathing. But obviously I was wrong. So they should drop here, but I mean, maybe down in the moon caves, but no, I'm kidding. Hey, I wanted to talk a little bit about Frederick William Fred Foy, who was host announcer in this and so many things. One of the great recognizable voices, if for nothing else, think of the Lone Ranger series here. Fred Foy was one of the most unmistakable, visceral sounds that will forever be associated with the Golden Age radio era. Few voice talents have left an impression upon the listener as Fred Foy. Now, he began his career in radio part-time at WBMC in Detroit. His voice was first heard on Father Coughlin radio program in 1939. By 1942, Foy had obtained a position at Detroit's legendary WXYZ, home to Fran Stryker and the wonderful emblematic series The Lone Ranger, The Green Hornet, and The Challenge of the Yukon. By 1945, Fred Foy was regularly being heard as the booming announcer for The Lone Ranger, and indeed serving as Brace Beaver's understudy for a time. I did want to break at this point and mention, yes, I think it was John Todd who had been portraying the Lone Ranger. He died in a car accident. They didn't know exactly what to do. Brace Beamer was the announcer. He was heard so regularly, they had about a month, maybe a month and a half, where the Lone Ranger was very ill. Tonto handled most of the duties and would go back to check on the Lone Ranger every night, and all you would hear would be this heavy breathing. And when the Lone Ranger came out of it that month or month and a half later, it was Brace Beamer. Now, because he had been the announcer and his voice was so familiar, many people didn't even realize that it was Brace Beamer who was now the Lone Ranger and not the announcer. At that point, Fred Foy took over the part of the Lone Ranger, and he kept it through there and through television. During World War II, Fred Foy served as Sergeant Foy, technician fourth grade with the Army's 14th Special Services Unit in Cairo, Egypt, and throughout the Middle East, distinguished himself as one of the most well-recognized American voices in the Middle East. After his discharge from the Army, he returned to WXYZ to become the full-time announcer for the Lone Ranger for the remainder of its run. He also voiced the equally stirring introduction to the television run of the Lone Ranger. He joined ABC Network in 1960, serving as staff announcer with ABC for the following 20 years. It was during this time with ABC that he became the voice of Theater 5. Foy recounted an amazing career span with WXYZ years through the ABC years in an autobiography appropriately entitled Fred Foy from WXYZ to ABC. Fred was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame in March of 2000. He was awarded the Motion Picture and Television Fund's Golden Boot Award in August of 2004. There you go.
And he's in our episode tonight, First Encounter from Theater 5, all the way back in 1964. Here is part two. We'll be back.
Thank you.
see them or hear their voices. Are they here now? Why have they placed me in this room? And where are the others?
All right, you don't have to shove.
Joe.
You can only see them.
Joe.
Well, we're alive. Where's Marge?
I don't know. They put me on a table, too. But they were gentle.
If we could only see them.
I did see part of a face when I sprayed the paint. Like no human on Earth. Hideous.
I don't get it, Clay. How could an invisible race evolve?
Well, I'm sure they're not invisible to each other.
Oh?
Apparently, their coloration is beyond our visible spectrum. Perhaps there's an entire range of colors which we can't perceive, but they're perfectly visible to a looning. Maybe that's why they examined our eyes so carefully.
And we don't hear any voices. Could their sounds be pitched above our audible range?
Maybe.
Marge!
Joe, Clay, Oh, why did you follow me? Just because I'm a woman? Now, none of us will get...
Marge! If Joe'd been carried off, we'd have tried to rescue him. Sure, the success of the expedition is important, but we're still human. So, man or woman, let's stay human if we can.
What are we going to do?
Take it easy, honey. We don't know yet.
That wall, look. It's changing.
I can see through it.
Yes, it's becoming transparent.
Looks like some kind of a throne room.
Strange light. I can see them. Them. Faces like gargoyles. And hands and feet.
Claws. They sure aren't pretty.
But they're humanoid. And apparently very advanced. Once they determined that they were invisible to us, they devised that light so we could see them.
They're all looking in our direction.
Well, go on, take a good look.
Easy, Joe.
What's that sound?
Earth people, do not fear.
Voice, where did it come from? It
didn't seem to come from anywhere except from inside my own head.
Telepathy.
Yes, we have created a telepathic field in which communication is total. You may either speak or think. All is understood. I am Var, ruler of the moon. You will not be harmed, rest assured. We find you equally repulsive, but we are more tolerant.
We are the first Earthmen to land on the moon. We have come in peace.
In peace, you are welcome.
Well, why did you grab us?
We sent a delegation to greet you, but we found you could neither see nor hear us. It was decided then to examine you for your deficiencies. Your eyes have a very limited range, and you are incapable of hearing any but the obvious sounds. The woman still fears harm.
Forgive me. Will you permit us to return to Earth?
You will remain in peace.
Wait a minute. You can't mean...
The decision has been made. No other expedition will be permitted to land on the moon. Their radio will be silenced as yours was silenced. Their ships will be destroyed. You shall be the only Earthlings permitted to dwell on the moon.
Why did you spare us?
Curiosity. Major Brown, we cannot permit Earth to conquer the moon.
But we had no idea the moon was inhabited. There's no need for conquest. We could live together, sharing.
Share? Live in harmony? We have studied our mother planet for centuries. There's been far more war than peace. At this very moment on Earth, men are dying for no better reason than greed.
We dedicated this expedition to peace between nations.
Earth's peoples must learn to live on Earth before expanding to new worlds. Eons ago, when man on Earth had not yet evolved, the moon was fully inhabited. An atmosphere covered our entire surface as the moon revolved on its axis at a greater speed. We were many nations then, all highly advanced. But our scientific progress outdistanced our ethical progress. Several nations vied to be the first to explore Earth.
You had harnessed nuclear energy?
It harnessed us. We are descendants of the few survivors of the last war on the moon. Our atmosphere was all but destroyed in the nuclear holocaust. The moon's rotation slowed so that one side is always exposed to the burning sun and the other to perennial darkness. Only a narrow zone between the two supports life. Thus, we are now one nation, one civilization, dedicated to eternal peace.
But let us take back this knowledge to Earth. Let us convince our nations.
Earth must know its own purification. Out of its ashes shall come men who will remember and tell each succeeding generation. Then perhaps thousands of years hence, Earthmen will be ready to explore other worlds in peace.
We're ready now. Listen, 100 expeditions will follow us. Oh, sure, you'll destroy some of them, but some will get through. Then you'll wish you had...
You threaten? You, supposedly a man of peace? How would the others treat the inhabitants of the moon? They would attempt to enslave us. You shall remain on the moon for the rest of your lives.
Well, I don't know what this food is, but it'll never replace steak.
Well, we're going to have a long time getting used to it.
Maybe not. Look, Clay, I'm afraid to think anything.
They can't read our minds unless one of those machines is turned on, and we can hear the hum.
Are you sure?
Positive. I had a telepathic conversation with one of their scientists. I was careful to keep out any thoughts about escape.
Clay, do you have a plan?
The Loonings are so convinced of their superiority that they don't believe we'll attempt to escape. You know the ship is just as we left it.
Look, Clay, I know they've given us total freedom, but don't sell them short. I'll bet they've got a ray or something that they'll blast us apart with before we can hit escape velocity.
The Loonings have no such weapons.
How do you know?
Until now, they had no need for any. Remember, they're one nation. Oh, they have the knowledge, all right. If more expeditions start coming, I don't doubt they'll work out a defense system.
What puzzles me is, with all their knowledge and scientific ability, why hadn't they explored Earth?
They did, with radar telescopes and interceptor radio waves.
You mean they picked up our television broadcasts? Oof, what a mixed up picture of our civilization they must have gotten.
I'm afraid they accumulated a very accurate picture of nations at war. That's why they don't want anything to do with us.
Clay, I don't want to live out my life on the moon.
I second that motion. Even if they've got weapons we don't know about.
Okay. Now let's go up to the surface. We walk on a sand path so we'll be able to spot any moving footprints. And if you should hear the hum from a telepathic machine, put your mind on any subject but escape.
Well, there she is. Old Orion 1. I wonder if there's a guard on board.
Let's find out.
It doesn't seem possible that we're not being watched.
Pull up the ladder and close the hatch, Joe.
Ah, it's too easy. They're going to blow us up, I know.
Start checking systems.
Cabin pressure up. Oxygen okay.
Attach harnesses. Ready to fire engines.
Ready.
Fire.
Space Central to Orion 1. You're entering radio beam range. Are you ready to hook into beam? Over.
Orion 1, delighted to accept the invitation. You boys take over now.
You're entering the ionosphere. Radio blackout due at any moment. Happy landing.
Well, all we can do now is relax. You worried, Clay?
Yes.
Well, after we report to the president, he'll take over from there.
That sound.
Earthmen, it is now the time to make our presence known to you.
They're right here on the ship.
You'll let us escape.
It was the wish of our ruler that you transport us to Earth.
But we would have been glad to. There was no need to stow away.
Our ruler is wise. He reasoned that if you knew of our mission, you would destroy your ship and yourselves. You are now controlled by radio beams from Earth. You can do nothing to prevent our landing with you.
What are you going to do?
We shall live among you, undetected by your inferior vision. Our mission is to bring peace to the nations of the Earth.
Peace? Then why the subterfuge?
I think I know. The Loonings believe that peace on Earth can be attained only the way they achieved peace on the moon, through nuclear war.
Yes, we will help you achieve peace.
We can do it without war.
We shall see, Earthman. We shall see.
Will you wait? Will you give us a chance to tell the world? Is there much time?
There is time, but very little time.
Theater 5 has presented First Encounter, written by Leonard Stad and directed by Warren Somerville. In the cast, Jackson Beck, Tony Darnay, William Mason, Brett Morrison, and Robert Dryden. Audio engineer Neil Pulse, sound technician Ed Blaney, script editor Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastutsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Edward A. Byron. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
I'll tell you, Dave, I recognized Jackson Beck's voice right away, too.
And Brett Morrison. Brett Morrison, we talked at the beginning of this program. Brett Morrison, he also was in this one. Of course, Fred Foy, that great announcer's voice.
Yep.
So
we're not done celebrating with the moon just yet.
No. You know, and I forgot there's yet still something to be learned from this episode when we get around to it.
Ah, an afterthought, if you will. Eerie House Radio proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story.
Whereas apologies to Gar, it's okay to play with invisible friends. It's not okay bringing them back from the moon. There you go.
Bye-bye.
All right. Hey, I've come up with a few things, Dale. I'm sure you have too. Let's share some things that we wouldn't have without space or space travel. You've got some of those things listed there?
Nope.
You do not. Okay. I'm going to start off with it then. Camera phones. In the 1990s, a team of Jet Propulsion Laboratory worked to create cameras small enough to fit onto spacecraft with scientific quality. One third of all cameras contain this technology. Scratch-resistant lenses. The Lewis Research Center attempted to develop a diamond hard coating for aerospace systems, later creating a technique that was developed and patented for just that purpose. CAT scans. A space program needed a pretty good digital image. The JPL played a lead in developing this technology, which in turn helped create CAT scanners and radiography.
Now LED. We can scan our cat.
Yeah, that's true. If you can get them to sit still long enough. LED, you have to scan. If you scan your cat, you got to have it on your lap. That's the way it works there. Red LEDs are being used in space to grow plants and heal humans on Earth. LED technology used by NASA has contributed to the development of medical devices such as Warp 10, whatever a Warp 10 medical device is.
Uh-huh.
Landmine removal. Theocol Propulsion uses NASA's surplus rocket fuel to produce a flare that can safely destroy landmines. It works by burning a hole through the mine without detonation. Here's one I didn't know about. Athletic shoes. Nike Air Trainers wouldn't exist if it weren't for construction technology developed by NASA. It was a former NASA engineer that first pitched the idea. Foil blankets. These metallic sheets, which are now used on Earth in extreme temperatures, evolved from a lightweight insulator NASA developed to protect the spacecraft and people in space. Dustbusters. NASA approached Black & Decker to develop a lightweight device to collect samples on the moon. The company then used this technology to create the Dustbuster in 1979.
Nice.
Ear thermometers. You want to see how hot your ear is. NASA and Diadec developed an 8-ounce aural thermometer, which uses infrared astronomy technology to measure the amount of energy emitted by the eardrum. Even home insulation, space is a place of extreme temperatures. Knowing this, NASA developed an insulation from aluminized polyester called radiant barrier, used today in most home insulations. The jaws of life, an extricated tool to free people from mangled vehicles. The jaws of life applies a miniature version of an explosive charge used to separate devices on the space shuttle. Wireless headsets. NASA, being one of the forerunners for advancing communications technology, developed these headsets to allow astronauts to be hand-free without wires. Memory foam. Memory from mattresses are the result of an incredible foam developed by NASA in the 1970s to help make airline pilot seats more comfortable. They were later installed in space shuttles. There we go. Going back further, freeze-dried food. NASA conducted extensive research into space food. One technique was they developed was freeze-drying, which retains 98% of the nutrients and weighs only 20% of the original weight. The adjustable smoke, we've only got a few more here, but adjustable smoke detector, while NASA didn't actually invent the first smoke detector, it did come up with a more modern version of the invention, creating the most sophisticated alarm system ever invented. The baby formula, infant formulas now contain a nutritional enrichment ingredient, the origin of which can be traced back to NASA's sponsored research that explored the use of algae for long-duration space travel. Artificial limbs. NASA's innovations into shock absorption materials coupled with robotic extra-vehicle activities are being adapted to create more functional dynamic artificial limbs. Computer mouse. In the 1960s, a NASA researcher was trying to make the computers more interactive when an idea was suggested about how to best manipulate data on computer screen leading to the mouse. And the 20th one they have here in the portable computer. The SPOC was created by adapting the Grid Compass, the first portable laptop. In its creation, hardware had to be modified and new software developed, which propelled the commercial market. So there you have, and these are just 20 of the things. I mean, you could be talking the flip phones and all kinds of things, but, you know, these are just 20 things that came from, 20 things we wouldn't have without space travel.
That's true, and the moon has also, and the interest in science has inspired music.
Yeah, it did.
And way back long ago, our dear Betty Grable, the Million Dollar Legs lady,
yep,
recorded this this song you brought for us, Dave.
Yep.
And it's called It's Only a Paper Moon.
Okay there, gang. Here comes another star-studded Taffy Pullen hayride featuring your favorite performers as per your request. To command performance, Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. And tonight, the first sergeant in charge of entertainment is one of Hollywood's loveliest stars. She's blonde, she's beautiful, and she's standing here at the microphone on the world's most gorgeous legs, Betty Grable.
Over a cardboard sea, but it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Yes, it's only a canvas sky hanging over a muslin tree, but it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Without your love, it's a honky-tonk parade. Without your love, it's a melody played in a penny arcade. It's a Barnum and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Without your love,
You're welcome, Betty.
Mrs. Green James.
Stars back then were really stars because not only did they do movies, look at how well she sang.
Yeah. Oh, and she was actually, a pretty decent dancer, which is why the studio did actually, at a time when it was unheard of, they did insure her legs for $1 million, as you have mentioned. Also, she was Mrs. Harry James, but a big difference there, when she got on a bus, the guy wouldn't get up there, stand up and give a seat to Harry, but he would give it to Betty. So there you go. That particular song sold a lot of copies for a guy named Cliff Edwards, also known as Ukulele Ike, also known as Jiminy Cricket. Paper Moon, he had one of the early recordings of Paper Moon.
Nice.
And what a shame it was that guy died. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's also okay. I was just going to say, musically then, we travel now to a suburb of Cleveland.
Yes, we do.
Locally, folks, Parma has has historically had a large population of, let's say certain ethnic people. with an ethnicity similar to Chuck Schadowski. Chuck Schadowski was one of our great horror hosts on television, of course, with the Houlihan and Big Chuck show, and later Little John and Big Chuck.
Yep. And still around at 85 and getting ready for his Goulardi Fest coming up in October, which we will also be at. And Dale, we're in the main room this year. I made sure of that. We're in the main room. So.
That's only justice with the premiere of Spaceship One coming.
We're
zooming around space here. We might as well mention it once again that Dave will be premiering Spaceship One with some tremendous effects, great comedy, wonderful guests.
It is a really cool thing. You can keep up with it on Facebook. If you put in Space-Ship-One, you'll see it right there, and you can go ahead and click on there, like it, so we know that you're on. James, who is basically doing most of the filming and directing and most of the editing, where I'm doing the other parts of the production, I'm herding the cats, which is the cast and all, and I'm doing the majority of the writing and helping pull this whole thing together. We're planning 8 full episodes, each of them about 18 minutes apiece, believe it or not. And I know I've sent some stuff to Dale, and I've been sending some pictures out too. It's absolutely amazing the work that this guy is doing. I never thought staying in Akron, Ohio, I'd be able to ever be part of anything near as cool as what this is coming out. Because Dale, you've seen some of this too. I've got a non-official web page going up for it too. If you go to weirdnessreallybadmovie.com, at the very top of the page, there's some stuff on it and a link to an unofficial Spaceship One web page. So that's another way you could see it. But heading back to the Cleveland suburb, which is actually the 6th largest city in Ohio, Parma. And as you alluded to the Chuck Schadowski, this was actually written for a segment of their show. It was a segment where local people could show up with some kind of weird talent. I mean, there were some weird things on there. Matter of fact, Dale, I have to tell you, you know Al Klesch, right? At least you've seen him on many of the productions we have. As a young man, he and his best friend got up there on New Town Time and did a song about how they love frogs that they made up. they did get the hook. Yeah, but there was another show, a song on here. There were two great songs. One was about all the different Cleveland suburb communities. Then there was this one about Parma. And this actually had, again, talked about many of the Cleveland, Northeast Ohio communities as well. Really cool. It's time to hit that play button, Dale.
Without further ado, here is our new talent for today. Hello, sir, and what is your name?
Bob.
And Bob, what are you going to be doing today?
I'm going to be doing an original song I wrote especially for this show.
Okay, here is Bob.
Moon over Parma, bring my love to me tonight. Guide her to East Lake underneath your silvery light. We met in Ashtabula, she was doing the hula. I handed her my radishes and pledged my love that night. Moon over Parma, won't you bring my love to me? Shine on the freeway to guide her AMC. Get her past the radar Mounties, bring her to Lake County. Moon over Parma tonight. Moon over Parma, shine on I-271. 'Cause we can't get together in the warm light of the sun. I'm asking you, don't fail. Get her safely through Lindale. I can't go to Parma, 'cause my Edsel will not run. Moon over Parma, where the pink flamingos stand. I need her kisses and the soft touch of her hand. We're going bowling, so don't lose her in Solon. Moon over Parma, tonight, I said tonight. Moon over Parma, tonight, tonight.
Well, maybe next time.
Of course, it was the voice of little John Rinaldi.
Yep.
One of our local heroes.
And, of course, the song was eventually elevated to the theme of the Drew Carey Show for the first 2 years of the series. It was Drew Carey that sang about one verse of Moon Over Parma with an animated Drew Carey face singing it as the credits were the show credits were popping up on the screen. They're really cool. So the world that watched Drew Carey knows about that, but those of us from Northeast Ohio really know what it's all about. So such
yeah,
a cool
the,
thing.
The lyric folks, you might not get them, but there were some funny references locally. Like, I hope I can get through Lindale. There's known speed
yeah.
traps.
Oh yes. Yep. The Mounties, yep, the speed traps in Lindale.
That was,
yes, that in Brooklyn, but but anyway. Oh, what a great two nights! This has been a great two nights. I've truly enjoyed these stories about the first landing on the moon, and just this is such a neat thing. I really have gotten a kick out of these.
It's definitely a topic that I have enjoyed with, you know, again, Dave, you and I grew up during that period. We got to hear Neil Armstrong say,
"It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind." Oh, that looks beautiful from here. It has a stark beauty all its own. It's like much of the high desert of the United States. It's different, but it's very pretty out here.
And of course,
which reminds me of the Mr. Gorski story, which I can't tell on the air.
Oh, my.
You know that story about Neil Armstrong and the Gorskis next door, right?
I do not.
Okay.
You'll have to tell me offline.
I'll call and tell you this week, yes. it's not real bad, but it's very funny, but it's not something that we can really do on the air here. So it has been proven to shove a nickel into the jukebox, which I'm going to do right now, Dave. I got an extra nickel here. There you go.
Oh, okay. You got it this time. All right.
Men, no shaving proposition beats this. Listen. There's $1 cash, says Colgate Brushless, wins you in a flash. Yes, $1 cash says this is it for the clean, smooth, comfortable shaves you've always wanted. And here's why.
Because it's light and fine textured, Colgate Brushless completely surrounds, softens, and supports each bristle better than greasy, heavy creams. There's no matting down. There is no clogging. Your razor doesn't skid or skip when you use Colgate Brushless. Instead, it cuts through clean and smooth.
Try Colgate Brushless. See how it does away with razor scrape and soreness. Discover how slick and smooth and downright comfortable it makes your shave.
Get a large or giant-sized tube or jar of Colgate Brushless Shaving Cream. If 1 week's use doesn't win you completely, just send me back the carton top and we'll mail you your dollar. Address, Bill Stern, care of Colgate, Jersey City, Zone 2, New Jersey. Remember, there's $1 cash says Colgate Brushless wins you in a flash. Real five.
There you go. All kinds of fun there. And what do you got coming up next week, Dale?
No idea. No, we're doing some mummies, I believe, next week. We're spending the night with Mummy. The Crime Club, Murder Takes a Mummy. The Avenger, The Crypt of Toth. Or Foth? Or Thoth? I don't know. Ripley's Believe It or Not, The Golden Mummy. And then we continue on into Saturday with Radio Stage, The Mummy Speaks, and World Adventurers Club, Living Mummy. That's next weekend here on Erie House Radio.
Absolutely. All kinds of great fun. Great fun.
Yeah, then we're going to have body snatchers, elevators going up and down, lighthouses. Who knows?
But, yeah, it's next Saturday we'll be hearing, we haven't had one in a while, WCRS Radio Stage, one of the shows that I co-wrote, and it is one of the shows that made right out of Akron, Ohio here.
It's about time we got one of those back here, Dave. You know I enjoy those, so glad that it hit our theme of spending a weekend with Mummy.
You know, this is interesting because this was based on one of the first mummy stories, if not one of the first mummy to come to life, one of the first by an American author. This was an adaption, the only adaption we did during the radio stage, an adaption of Edgar Allan Poe's Conversation with a Mummy. So that's where this one comes from. So
great inspiration.
Look forward to
Think how much Edgar Allan Poe impacted old-time radio with all the great shows. I want to thank everybody for listening in. Fogsbane, who had to leave funeral, thanks for stopping in and listening live here on Erie House. We'll be back Friday at 8:30 Eastern, again with our shows on mummies. See you next time, folks.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Got that damn candle out.
There we go.
Fun.
I can't believe you don't know the Mr. Gorski story. Okay. I still can't tell because we're still recording. But I will make it a point to call you and tell you the Gorski story.
Okay. He won't even put it in print, folks. That's how naughty it is. Wow.
It's just a little too close to that line that we have there, Dale. It's just it's not a horrid story, but it's just a little too close to that line we have. Very funny. There are a lot of jokes I see. I said, man, this would be a great, I just start laughing. I said, what a great story. And I said, I could never do this on my show, but it's still a great story.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, I like these Theater Five and some of the more modern stuff. The CBS Radio Mystery Theaters. Not that I don't love the old ones, I do. For sci-fi, it seems though it's much more suitable to move up a little bit. There wasn't a whole lot of sci-fi in the 40s. There really wasn't.
No.
Very little.
Well, it wasn't until 1950s we still really started getting real sci-fi. I mean, not that Buck Rogers wasn't real sci-fi, not that Flash Gordon wasn't real sci-fi, but to me, that was as much fantasy as it was sci-fi. These things that happened in the 50s, the 50s and beyond, were so much, I guess, more real, more I could relate to, that kind of a thing.
Well,
I guess that's what I want to say.
For the sci-fi, I think Flash Gordon and those serials, they were more for the high adventure, I think, than for the sci-fi. It was almost like a western, really, an odor.
Right. You're right. Yeah.
Where you started getting, in movies, it was, of course, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Rocket Ship XM, these early science fiction films. And then, of course, the great radio shows that started coming out based on the great science fiction that was being written in those pulp magazines. And original stories as well.
It's kind of interesting how most... A lot of early television came off of early radio. There were a couple shows that came out of television first and then onto radio. One was Have Gun Will Travel, and the other one was the radio version. It didn't last very long. Of the Tales of Tomorrow, the wonderful ABC Live television drama, or television science fiction. And they had some great stuff. I look at that stuff today, realizing that was back from 1950 to 1952, done live. To me, that is absolutely amazing. Yet the radio version didn't last, I don't think, anything longer than half a year. And there's about maybe eight of those that have survived in time. It didn't have the impact that the television version did, and that's odd, because the radio have gone
so much.
I
had so much fun sharing those television versions of Tales of Tomorrow on Erie House TV when they had that up and running, because those were very good, Dave. You're absolutely right.
I play a TV stream that has nothing but 1950s shows on it. And TV Time Warp .weebly.com will take you there. And that is one of the things I have in there is a Tales of Tomorrow and a Lights Out. But there's also all kinds of other things like the Dragnet and the One Step Beyonds and the Sherlock Holmes from 54 and so many shows like that, the Richard Diamond Private Detective and Theater, Four Star Theater and Man with a Camera, which is Charles Bronson's first starring TV roles. And just so many cool things like that. But I do have, you know, with One Step Beyond and Tales of Tomorrow and Lights Out, have some of that cool science fiction in there. I just finished the sixth part of Quatermass 2, the UK. I guess it would be like a mini series, or as their series in the UK, usually much shorter than ours are. Cool stuff, though.
It is. So, now, the Quatermass that you're watching, is that from early television?
Yes.
Ooh. You know, they had the Quatermass trilogy of movies.
Right.
They weren't made as a trilogy, they turned out to be that way.
Yeah. No, it's just a lot of fun just looking back on these old Lassies and all these great shows, you know, the old Michael Shane with Darren McGavin, things like that. So just fun stuff. The television, the way it used to be, is what it is how I kind of bill it there. And there's nothing, I don't have anything from any of the horror hosts or any Weirdness Really Bad or anything like that. I've just got shows from mostly from the 1950s. And I always have a movie of the night and a movie of the week there, and just all kinds of great things. So if you ever get bored, you can watch it on your pad or your phone or your computer. I tried it on my smart TV and everything worked but the video stream, so that my smart TV wasn't smart enough for that.
Or as you like to say about your phone, smarter than me TV.
Yeah, the phone is smarter than me phone, yes. So much
technology. I hope everybody survived the heat, terrible heat across the country as we are broadcasting this weekend.
There is an answer to that, Dale. Ice cream.
Yeah, air conditioning.
Yeah, ice cream.
ice cream isn't a big option for me.
No, it isn't.
I love the stuff. But be that as it may.
Well, we wish our good buddy Gar a very, very good, much better time than what he has. He needs to concentrate on that, and then we'll have him back as soon as we can. Besides, the funny thing is, I was just talking to him Monday night, and he was feeling, outside of being a little tired, he was feeling really good, and it just really, it really hit him like a ton of rocks.
I talked to him this morning. He sounded a little better. Just going up and down with his health. Not fun.
Yeah.
So.
But he is our brother in our hearts.
Yes, he is.
Well,
Brother Gar.
And always love to have him right here with us on Erie House. We always know we're in for a little more entertaining time whenever our buddy Gar the Ghoul is right here.
He is a kook, and we love him for it.
Yeah, he is. And even when he comes in with a little too much coffee, stand aside.
Sometimes it's
even
better. Yeah, even better.
Yep, stand aside and let him go. Oh, shoot. Well, maybe it's time for us to get out of the heat here, Dale, and get back under the fan and the air conditioning and just kind of take it from there. So perhaps.
Yeah, we'll be back doing Mummies this weekend coming up.
That's right. Right after, and so with all that said, it's time for Jimmy to say good night, everybody.
Good night, Mummy.
Good night. Good night. Good night. time to say good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the day, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.